Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-HQMP or 4767 for appointments.
Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, November 26th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga OBGYN at Myrtle Street, an affiliate of Saratoga Hospital, welcoming Drs. Hayden, Lambers, and Verliger to the growing Obgyn team at Saratoga Hospital, saratogaobgyn.org. Here to discuss rheumatology is Dr. Leonard Siegel of Berkshire Health Systems. Medical Monday is always a popular program, so make sure you get your questions in early. All right, number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Siegel, rheumatology and your calls, all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show, Medical Monday. I'm Alan Chartok. In the studio this afternoon to discuss rheumatology is Dr. Leonard Siegel of Berkshire Health Systems. Dr. Siegel is board-certified in rheumatology and joined BHS earlier this year. He graduated from Stanford University School of Medicine, completed an internal medicine residency at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York City. Nothing shabby there. Dr. Siegel, welcome.
It's great to be here.
So, very quickly, what is rheumatology again?
Rheumatology is the study of joint diseases and of maintenance of joint function and structure, basically.
And name some diseases that people within your purview come to see you about.
Well, the big one is osteoarthritis, but there's rheumatoid arthritis, there's psoriatic arthritis, there's lupus, there's gout, there's scleroderma, inflammatory muscle disease, a whole host of different problems.
And as soon as somebody walks in the office, do you know what they've got?
Usually not immediately upon them walking in the office. It takes at least 1 or 2 minutes to figure it out.
It's great. Well, listen, the lines are adding up already, filling up. We have three on the line. If you want to get in, folks, I'm just telling you now, don't be calling me up later and telling me that, you know, I didn't take your call. What a terrible person I am. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You want to talk to Dr. Siegel? This is the time to get on the phone. You wait a few seconds. You have a little patience. You'll get on. Okay, as usual, Jim from Matamoros. Go ahead, Jim. What do you got?
Thinking back a century or so ago to the loggers and rafters who spent a lot of time in cold water, is there any environmental causes for rheumatism?
Well, first of all, the term rheumatism is sort of overly broad, but there are many theories as to environmental triggers of diseases like rheumatoid arthritis and lupus. There's a genetic predisposition and then some sort of environmental trigger, but the triggers, for the most part, have not been identified. As for cold water, for osteoarthritis of the hands, probably no influence whatsoever.
Well, thank you, James. Okay, and we'll go to Alan in Bear Mountain. Alan, you're on.
Yes, here's a quick question about my hands. Is this arthritis or something else? The hands freeze up, they go super numb, and they always hurt. Is that arthritis, or what's your thought on that?
It is difficult to tell without being able to see those hands. Freezing up means that they're cold, maybe they turn color. If they hurt, then there might be arthritis, it might be osteoarthritis, it might be something else. First step is to see your primary care physician, and if a rheumatologist is needed, a referral should be made.
Okay, thank you, Alan. All right, and now to Mark in Salem. Mark in Salem, your turn.
Hello, doctors. I was diagnosed in 1987 with what we thought was fibromyalgia. Now, that's a catch-all for a lot of things. James Strasburg, who was the president of Schenectady Physicians, was my rheumatologist. And when he retired, he and I both decided that I had something like tight muscle disease. And this past fall, I was doing I was building a woodshed, and I was being very careful, and now I have pain in both shoulders. I went to my PA. She recommended me to a orthopedic surgeon or orthopedic person, and I think that it would be something that could be cleared up with a proper injection of cortisone mixed with lidocaine. And in Greenwich, where I go to, they don't mix it with lidocaine, so it's very painful. What are your thoughts about the shoulder and its maintenance? And I'm left-handed. My left shoulder is much worse than my right. I hardly use my right, but it started to do the same thing. Do you have any suggestions, or do you think that an injection might be something that's worth a try, or a little prednisone or something like that?
Okay, here we go, Mark. Go ahead, Doc.
It's always possible that an injection would be useful, but the real question is, what's the problem with the shoulder? And that needs to be evaluated, if that means x-ray or just physical examination.
I had x-rays that showed nothing.
Okay, then a physical examination is warranted, and it depends on what section of the shoulder is inflamed or damaged, and then
below the joint.
Well, again, it requires physical examination, and it requires an understanding of the anatomy of the shoulder before one can decide what's the problem and what's the correct remedy. In some cases, injection is the correct remedy.
Okay, thank you. All right, that was Mark. And now we are going over to, let's see the time here. Okay, now we're going over to Leslie in Northampton. Okay, Leslie, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if there is a differential diagnosis for rheumatoid arthritis, and if so, what is it? Like, how is it distinguished from osteoarthritis?
Okay. The term differential diagnosis is basically a listing of the things that a physician thinks may be going on in given a certain history and a certain physical examination. Once that's determined, then you tick off the various things might be or might not be until you ultimately come to a diagnosis. So is there a differential diagnosis for rheumatoid arthritis? Yes, there are a number of different disease processes that can look remarkably similar, rheumatoid arthritis, early lupus, viral arthritis, among others. And so there, the proper use of history, physical examination, and sometimes laboratory can be very useful. Very different, however, from osteoarthritis. Osteoarthritis affects different joints than does rheumatoid. It manifests itself differently. The history and physical examination are quite different. And so it should be you should be able to differentiate between the two syndromes pretty easily.
Well, would you recommend seeing a rheumatologist about that? Because my primary care doctor just thought it was osteo, but wasn't sure about making that distinction because there were a couple of questions about it. So
what kind
of doctor would you recommend?
Well, as a rheumatologist, I'll tell you, I think it should be a rheumatologist. No, but seriously, what you're describing, I think, requires an informed opinion, and that would be a rheumatologist.
Right. Leslie, okay. Thank you. All right, and now on to none other than Joshua in Granby. Joshua, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I'm 25 years old, and about a couple years ago, I had a first incident where I was having joint pain. It started in my left wrist, and then I started to feel it in my right elbow. And for the next 3 or 4 days, the pain just started moving around to different parts of my body.
I'd go to sleep and I wouldn't be able to move my right shoulder. And then I'd wake up and like my left foot or a knee would be in just really in severe pain. I went to my primary care and they did take blood samples. They told me I had increased levels. I forget what it was, but it was something that would allude to a rheumatoid arthritis. But they never sent me to any specialist or anything. You know, it's happened maybe two more times since then. And I was just wondering your insight.
What you're describing is joint pain that migrates from joint to joint to joint. There are a few syndromes that can explain that, a few diagnoses that can explain that. And I feel like a broken record here, but I think the answer is for you to be seen by a rheumatologist, let that rheumatologist take a history, do a physical examination, and review the laboratory tests that have been done in order to come up with a potential explanation for you, because you deserve one at this point.
I would agree. I would agree.
Thanks, Joshua. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We got a lot of people on the phone. Jason and David and John and Noah and Tim and Linda. And we'll be getting to all of them, if they're patient, in just a moment while we take a short break. And we are back with Dr. Leonard Siegel. We're going to go to Linda in Dalton. Linda in Dalton, you're on. Go.
Hi. I have a question that's similar to one that a previous caller asked. But just slightly different. I wondered if there's a differential diagnosis for psoriatic arthritis as compared to osteoarthritis.
And doctor, what is psoriatic arthritis?
About 3% of the population has psoriasis, which is a skin disorder.
Sure.
A significant proportion of those people will also have inflammatory joint disease. And so those people have what's called psoriatic arthritis, which is typically different from rheumatoid arthritis. It has multiple different patterns of disease. Sometimes it can look remarkably like rheumatoid. Sometimes it can look remarkably like osteoarthritis. And this is another circumstance in which evaluation by somebody who is very familiar with all those arthritides that I mentioned just now can go over you, do a history, do the physical examination, make use of laboratory as is necessary, and then come up with the correct diagnosis. But for the most part, we can differentiate between osteoarthritis and psoriatic arthritis.
By the existence of the skin?
Well, interestingly, some people have almost no skin disease, and so you have to go searching for it occasionally.
Interesting. Okay, thank you very much for that. All right, now we're going to go to Joan in Queensbury, where everyone still plays by the rules. Joan, you're on.
Hi, I had a bad knee replacement about a year and a half ago, which may or may not be germane to this. But just recently, I've been having this outbreak of terrible joint pain in my wrists and my thumbs and my neck. And it's very sharp and painful. And I took it upon myself to take a prednisone dose pack, hoping it would help, and it didn't do anything. But I'm wondering if all these joint issues could be connected.
When you say all these joint issues could be connected, you mean connected to the prior joint replacement or all these joints new?
Yeah, to the joint replacement.
Right.
I also have spinal stenosis, which is why, and that comes and goes, you know, and degenerative disc disease and everything, but this, I can't open things. I have a hard time writing my name, and it's sharp pain.
I think it's unlikely that it's related to the joint replacement surgery, but it certainly sounds like there's something brewing there, and it needs to be evaluated by somebody who's familiar with the rheumatologic syndromes. Could this be osteoarthritis? Could it be something inflammatory? There are any one of a number of different potential explanations, but you need facts.
So, Doc, if you have osteoarthritis, could it present in various places in the same body?
Osteoarthritis typically affects multiple joints, but it doesn't sort of pop around from place to place to place. It's typically a disease of certain joints in the hands, the base of the thumb, the knee, or the hip for that matter. There are certain joints that are not affected. There are certain joints that are very classically affected.
So when people come to you, can you help them? In other words, can you cure them, or is it diagnose and adios?
No, we don't do the adios bit. It depends on the circumstances. There are certain disease processes that can be brought under control remarkably well, better every day in certain circumstances with new drugs that are being made available. There are certain circumstances in which physical therapy is warranted. Joint replacement is always the very last of our choices.
Okay, Joan, thank you. All right, now we're going to go, David in New Paltz. David in New Paltz, you're on.
Hello, doctors. Thank you for taking my call. My neighbor a year ago had a choice at Albany Medical Center to have a total knee replacement or to participate in a stem cell research program. And after he elected for the stem cell program, and a year later, he's walking with no pain and growing cartilage. He believes that that's going to replace the metal parts. What do you think,
Doc?
Well, he may very well be right. There are a number of groups around the world, for that matter, that are interested in looking at the ability to convince cells in the cartilage to grow and make more cartilage, or injecting stem cells, and those stem cells will wind up adhering to the damaged cartilage, and because of local factors, they become cartilage-producing cells. And that's exactly what your friend had, and I'm glad that he had a success.
David, great. Okay, and now we're going to go to none other than Tim in Great Barrington. All right, Tim, your turn. Go ahead.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I was diagnosed with gout a couple years ago. I've gotten pretty good at managing my gout. If I limit alcohol and I manage purines and food, I also take a uric acid supplement. But I still find sometimes that even when I'm doing really well managing that, I'll still have an outbreak. So I know I've read online that they say it could be stress-related also. So is that true? Is it something that I'm always going to deal with, or is it possible to manage yourself well enough where you never have it?
Gout is due to crystals of uric acid in the joint that break free and cause inflammation locally. And so foods that increase your serum uric acid are a bad are a problem. They may precipitate gout.
For example,
alcohol. Well, as an example. Foods that most people aren't really heavily into, like liver and kidney, pancreas, thymus, the sweetbreads, and shellfish.
Yeah.
Alcohol in modest amounts can decrease the ability of the kidneys to get rid of uric acid, so that can be a precipitant for a gouty flare as well. There are a variety of medicines that one can take in order to make sure that one does not get a gouty flare. If you've had multiple gouty flares, the likelihood of another one increases with the number of times you've already had gout. And so if you've had gout two or three or four times, then exploration with your doctor for what we call prophylaxis, which means prevention of gout, prevention from ever having another flare, would be warranted. And that usually requires medication.
Thanks, neighbor.
Okay.
All right. Now we'll go to John in Niskayuna. John, you're on.
Okay, thanks, Al, for taking my call. I'm not sure if this is a rheumatoid question or not, but it's an interesting situation with my hand that I thought I'd ask a good doctor about. I have a little point that's like sticking up under my skin, right where the joint, right at the joint where my fingers meet my hand. It does not hurt at all. It's almost like a pencil point is underneath the skin. And I showed it to my sister over Thanksgiving, and she showed me that she has like three or four of them. So I'm wondering if you've ever seen something like that, and see what you think.
Is it soft or is it hard?
It's hard. It's like a little ball almost at the joint.
And is it on the palm surface or on the upper surface of the hand?
It's on the palm surface, like the inside of the palm. And I have one at the joint of my pinky and my palm, and my sister has them on two or three of her fingers on each of her hands, these little bumps that don't hurt, but they're kind of a curious little anomaly.
Not seeing it, obviously, I'm at a bit of a disadvantage, but there are, not infrequently, there are little bones that are found in the body, in muscles, to alter the way the muscle pulls, basically to alter the direction of force of the muscle. And it may very well be that you have multiple of those in your hands. They're normal structure. They shouldn't be damaged. They shouldn't be bothered with. You shouldn't try to take them out or offer to have a hand surgeon do anything with it. Those little those little bones are important parts of the structure of the way your hand is put together. And it may very well be that in your family, you have multiple of these little bones.
Would appear so, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the sister has it too. John, are you okay?
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks
Thank
a lot,
you,
John. Yep, bye. Okay, and now, waiting on the phone for 11 minutes and 39 seconds is Noah in Springfield. Noah in Springfield, you're on.
Hi, thanks for having me. I have a question. I had a ACL repair, ACL patella autograft in 2012, and I'm acutely aware that there are high rates of osteoarthritis post-surgery, like later on in life. I'm a young guy. I hear my parents complaining about osteoarthritis and having issues with their knees. So I was just wondering, is there anything I could do to prevent that, or is that just a factor of life? Is there any supplements that can help or anything like that, or any kind of sort of activity?
Okay. Well, first of all, ACL is anterior cruciate ligament. So it's one of the ligaments in the knee that holds things in place. And the fact that anytime you have knee surgery, there is the possibility for developing osteoarthritis. And the more damage that remains, the more unstable the knee is, the more likely you are to develop osteoarthritis. So the best thing that somebody like you can do is a regular exercise regimen to stabilize your knee, keep it nice and biomechanically normal. I don't want to call it tight, but biomechanically normal. If, in fact, the reconstruction was a success and you do those exercises and keep the knee healthy, it should stay healthy for a long time. As for supplements, there really aren't any that are of any value.
Okay. Noah, thank you. All right, and now I'm looking for who's been on the longest. It's going to be Kylie in Red Hook. You win. All right, Kylie, you're on.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I was calling because my daughter, who is three, was recently diagnosed with juvenile idiopathic oligoarticular arthritis. And I am just concerned about the use of medication over the long term. I'm just wondering if there's any other way to manage it moving forward.
Juvenile idiopathic arthritis is a syndrome of inflammatory joint disease in children less than 16. Oligoarthritis just means not many joints are affected. It used to be a dreadful disorder. Nowadays, with the new biologic agents that are available, we can control it. Do we know what 20 years worth of biologic agent does to somebody? No. We have 20 years of experience with certain of the biologic agents in rheumatoid arthritis, and the original concerns about, oh, there's going to be cancer, oh, there's going to be an increasing risk of bad infections over the course of the years, none of those concerns has really played out. So as a rheumatologist who has taken care of children with JIA, juvenile idiopathic arthritis, I feel comfortable giving those biologic agents. The idea is, if you got somebody under control for a prolonged period of time, we always try to do what's called a drug holiday, and that is stop the drug for a while and see what happens. If there is a return of disease, you start the drug again. If there's no return of disease for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, however long, then that's time not exposed to the biologic. So there are lots of strategies available, but as a father, I can tell you I would prescribe those drugs to my children or my grandchildren with confidence.
Thank you, Kylie. Idiopathic is my favorite word in all of medicine.
Idiopathic means we haven't the foggiest notion.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Let's go then to Sharon in Highland. All right, Sharon, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. I'm 58. I'm in good health. I just recently started having random pain, a dull ache in the hip area, and sigh. It's not chronic. I'm not sure if it's sciatica or arthritis. And I've got a couple of questions. I've heard that cutting out nightshades, if you do have arthritis, is really helpful. And also, I'm an avid exerciser. Will jumping and burpees, is that bad if I do have arthritis? Will it damage my joints and tissues?
Let's go back to the nightshades.
Okay.
Deadly nightshades.
The deadly nightshades, that's what they used to be called. There's no truth that nightshades cause joint discomfort or joint damage. There's no truth to the supposition that by discontinuing them, you will somehow save your joints. So I think we should eliminate that from consideration to start with.
Okay.
It really does depend upon where your joint pain is, what makes it worse, what makes it better, for us to consider the differential diagnosis of discomfort in or near the hip. And so this is another example of history, physical examination, and then thought process will allow a physician who understands the structure and function of the hip to come up with a diagnosis and come up with recommendations. So certainly, as an example, let's say that you've got very bad hip osteoarthritis. Jumping up and down is probably not the best thing for you. On the other hand, if the pain is near the hip but not of the hip, it may very well be that certain exercises will be beneficial.
Okay, Sharon, thank you. And let's go to Corey in Lenox, Massachusetts. All right, Corey, your turn.
Hi there.
Yo.
I just wanted to call and ask a question about junior arthritis. I was told when I was a young kid I had a lot of pain in my joints. Someone told me that they thought I had junior arthritis and that someday it would get to be real bad. I now have children, and I'm noticing they're around, 10 years old, 12 years old. They're talking about their joints aching when, it's cold out or when it's raining, all the same sort of things that happened to me when I was a child. And some folks would say it's just growing pains. I was just wondering if you guys could explain the difference between growing pains and signs of what could be maybe junior arthritis, if that's such a thing, and if it could turn into more of a problem. At my age now, around 40, I still have the same symptoms of joint pain when it gets cold and damp, but I want to know what to look for as my kids are concerned.
Okay, here we go.
Sure. I'm not familiar with the term junior arthritis. That's first of all. It may very well be that you had joint discomfort many years ago. If you still have it, again, this is a time for you to be seen by a physician to evaluate that. If the joint discomfort in your grandchildren continues, they should be evaluated as well. But as I said, I've never heard of the term junior arthritis. Don't know what that is.
Okay, Corey, thank you.
Okay.
We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back for the third part of the program. And we have a lot of people on the phone: Campbell, Tammy, Brenda, Nancy, Brooke, and Sharon. And here we are back with Dr. Leonard Siegel. Patricia writes on the interweb, as Ray calls it. I'd like to ask if there are blood tests that can diagnose any version of arthritis. And that's from Patricia.
Patricia, there are lots of blood tests that are available. Not one of them is diagnostic of anything. They are useful in the proper setting, but a blood test that is supposed to be diagnostic of any disease can be positive in people who don't have the disease. It can be negative in people who truly have the disease, which is why when you think of the three-legged stool of making a diagnosis, history and physical are by far the more important. And the laboratory is useful, but by far the least useful of the three.
All right. Now we are going over to Nancy in Boston Spa. Nancy, thanks for your patience. Go ahead. Nancy.
I'm 51 years old, and I was diagnosed 11 years ago with Parkinson's disease, which is controlled. It's very slow progressing, and I'm doing very well on lots of medication. And also about 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with PMR. And I am on and have been on the lowest dose I can handle, which is 3 milligrams of prednisone. I am just wondering if someone, if you knew of any other, am I going to have this for the rest of my life, this PMR? And my neurologist says yes because of my Parkinson's. And I also have developed arthritis in my wrists and my knees. And I just, is there any hope for me?
Nancy, there's plenty of hope for you. First of all, PMR is polymyalgia rheumatica, which is a musculoskeletal pain condition typically affecting around the shoulders and around the hips, beautifully controllable with steroids, prednisone. The fact that you're capable of getting yourself down to 3 milligrams of prednisone is terrific. Some patients have a lot of difficulty getting down that low, and 3 milligrams is probably a safe dose of prednisone. Now, prednisone has no effect whatsoever on osteoarthritis because osteoarthritis is not primarily an inflammatory disease. Prednisone has no effect whatsoever on Parkinson's disease. And, in fact, you have three separate entities that really don't relate to each other. And as for Parkinson's making your polymyalgia rheumatica worse, I've never heard of that. And in terms of understanding the way the body works, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me that the two, that one would cause the other to be worse. But as I said before, the fact that you're down to 3 milligrams of prednisone is very good.
Yeah. Okay. No, it wasn't. I wasn't told that it was worse because it was just I probably would have the PMR. I wouldn't be able to get rid of it. In other words,
I'm not aware of there being any association between the two. And so, what I would recommend is continue to try tapering the steroids. And it is possible after a year or so, or sometimes longer, you'll be able to come off the prednisone entirely.
Thank you, Nancy. All right, let's go to Sharon in Schenectady. Okay, Sharon in Schenectady, you're on.
Hi, this is Sharon. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Hi, I'm calling regarding my daughter. She's 28 years old. About 10 years ago when she was in college, she developed a sun sensitivity, mainly on her face and eyelids. She had always had allergies. She calls it a sun allergy. She has environmental allergies as well. But since then, she's also developed, about 5 years after that, a Raynaud's in her hands and feet in the cold weather. And now, the past 2 years, she's been troubled with GI problems, gastric reflux, constipation. She takes Miralax twice a day, a PPI twice a day, as prescribed by her GI doctor. She sees a dermatologist for her skin. The sun affects her so much that she wears sunscreen, hats, sunglasses. She doesn't even drive during the bright hours of the day. Putting all these together, I made her see a rheumatologist about 5 years ago. You answered my question about the labs being negative at times in that diagnostic because all the rat labs and markers, whatever they drew, quite a bit actually came back negative. I felt that it was signs of lupus. Do you think it's signs of lupus? Do you think she could still have it and not be diagnosed properly?
Okay, stop there. We'll go to the doctor. Go ahead, Doc.
Photosensitivity, which is what you're describing, is a common finding in lupus. Raynaud's phenomenon is relatively common in lupus, but 10% of all women in the United States will have Raynaud's phenomenon, so that really doesn't help us. All the gastroenterologic problems she's suffering with, those are not classic manifestations of lupus. They can be seen in other disorders, other rheumatologic disorders. They can be seen having nothing to do with a rheumatologic syndrome. And so I guess the first question I would have is, what does the gastroenterologist think? And second of all, if it's been 5 years since she's been seen by a rheumatologist and you maintain your maternal concerns about her, seeing another rheumatologist would probably be warranted.
Right, okay. I've been coaxing her to do that, and she keeps telling me she will, and she has yet to make an appointment. And, yeah, the GI doctor did do an EGD back then. It showed nothing abnormal. I just feel like the skin, the GI stuff, everything's being treated separately and not looked at as a whole.
Okay, Doc?
She did on occasion. She used to cycle, rock climb indoors. She would complain about joint pain on occasion. She'd complain about being short of breath on occasion. For a 20-year-old something, you know, I just thought this was a lot of problems for someone.
It sounds like it is a lot of problems for somebody who's in her 20s, and very limiting, unfortunately. What you're describing, I suppose, could be a rheumatologic syndrome. It's difficult to tell in the abstract.
And how would that be diagnosed, though?
History and physical examination is the way we make most of the diagnoses we make in rheumatologic practice.
Sharon, I have to let you go. There's so many people behind you. I hope you understand. Okay, now let's go to Campbell in Melrose. Campbell, you're on.
Hi. Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear me? Yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, I was wondering if you knew anything about possible symptoms later in life when you get Lyme disease and it affects the joints, you know, if that can predispose you to arthritis later, or, you know, like the spirochetes are still in there doing their stuff. Just because I got it when I was very young and it went undiagnosed for a long time, lots of trauma there. And I'm 24 now, and I will get pain in the side of my leg where I had a problem last time. So I was just wondering if you knew anything about that.
Here we go.
Okay, let's do it. Campbell, it is possible to have Lyme disease and be treated with antibiotics, the appropriate antibiotics, and be cured. The spirochetes to which you were referring, the things that cause Lyme disease, which is an infection after all, are exquisitely sensitive to the routine antibiotics that we use in the treatment of such patients. As for long-term consequences, in somebody who has been adequately treated, there should really be no long-term consequences related to Lyme disease. If the person is not treated, you can be bitten by a tick, get the infection, and years and years and years later come up with joint inflammation. Hmm. But if you've been treated, you should really look in other directions for an explanation as to why you might still have joint discomfort or musculoskeletal discomfort.
Thank you, Campbell. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. And over to Tammy in Schenectady. Tammy?
Hi, how are you today? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
Let me preface by saying when I was 14 years old, I was diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic. I've been on insulin since then. About 10 years ago, I started having some problems with joint pain, with night sweats, with low-grade fevers constantly. My doctor ran some blood tests. He treated me for an infection and then wanted to repeat the test again in a month. When they repeated the test in a month, my ANA test came back positive with a speckled pattern, and he immediately sent me to a rheumatologist. The rheumatologist ran a bunch more tests that would indicate more of what that could indicate. And one of the things that came up in his extensive tests were a low amount of certain proteins. I think they were T3 or something like that, or C3. And I'm wondering, he would not give me, he told me it was reflective of lupus, but said he could not give me a lupus diagnosis because I have to meet 5 of the criteria out of 12. I guess my question is, he went through this, he put me on Plaquenil. I've been on Plaquenil now for 10 years, regular eye test, everything is fine. I guess my question is, will this ever get to a point, which I really don't want, for it to become a lupus diagnosis rather than just a mixed connective tissue disorder.
Okay, stop it right there, doctor.
Okay. The ANA is the anti-nuclear antibody. It's a commonly used test in rheumatology practice. It is sometimes thought of as being a diagnostic test for lupus, which it certainly is not. It can be positive in a variety of other autoimmune disorders, including scleroderma and something called mixed connective tissue disorder. So assuming that your clinician was applying the criteria correctly, that is a diagnosis of rheumatologic disorder that doesn't really fall into a neat category. There are a couple of blood tests that are positive in that, uniquely positive in that syndrome. Plaquenil is a drug that we use a lot of in rheumatologic practice. It quite frequently stops the disorder. And so if it's working, you'll never develop full-blown lupus. Maybe you were never meant to develop full-blown lupus in the first place.
Okay. Thank you so much for your answers.
You're welcome.
Bye. All right. Over to Brooke in Schenectady. Brooke in Schenectady, your turn.
Hi. Hello.
Yeah, you're there.
Okay. I developed bursitis, I think, out of the blue. I'm not an athlete. I'm not excessively sporty at all. So I've got bursitis. I'm told to raise it, ice it. I've had it since January. Sometimes it's almost crippling to try to walk down the stairs. I'm a glaucoma suspect, so I walk every day. And I've noticed that dairy products can make it swell the next day. Can you tell me anything that I can do, like where to go, how to proceed?
Bursa is a collection of tissue that basically holds two muscles apart so they can move in their own directions and not basically damage each other. And they're bursae all over the body. Yours, the one that's bothering you is your hip?
Right knee.
Okay.
There are four of them that are swelled.
Okay. If you're having bursitis that has lasted this long, then you need to be seen by either an orthopedist or a rheumatologist to find out why you've had bursitis for 10 and a half months. That's not right.
Okay.
Go do it, Brooke. Thank you. All right. Now, we're trying to catch up with as many people as we can. Hanging on for a long time is Brenda in Pine Plains. Brenda, you're on.
Oh, hi. I just want to ask the doctor what he thinks about the use of methotrexate for arthritis of the hand.
Methotrexate is a marvelous drug for the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis. So if that's what you have in your hand, that is the best drug to use as sort of an entry point into pharmacological management. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do anything for osteoarthritis.
Okay.
And so it really depends upon the diagnosis as to whether or not methotrexate is appropriate, but it's a terrific drug.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Brenda. All right, we're catching up now. Let's go to Meg in Esopus. Okay, Meg in Esopus, you're on.
Hi. I have, when I close my hand tightly, sometimes I can't open it for a full minute or more. Is that anything I should be concerned about?
When you say you can't open it, do you mean a single finger?
The
entire thing. If it were my hand, I'd be concerned about it, and I'd want to be seen by a competent hand surgeon. Sure. I have no idea what's going on there, but obviously this is getting in the way of your function.
Well, it's not that often, because I have to hold it real tight, so it'd be in an unusual situation.
It
happened when I was flying.
Right. Even so, it does suggest that there's something going on there that needs to be evaluated and managed appropriately.
Thank you, Meg. Let's go now to Bonnie in Greenwich. Okay, Bonnie, you're on.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the woman who called recently with the 3-year-old daughter, and she's hesitant to put her on heavy-duty drugs. I just don't agree that those heavy-duty drugs don't have side effects. I've had RA for 6 years, and I came on very, very suddenly and very, very severe. I was put on Actemra,
which is $4,000 per infusion. My insurance company would not let me go off it to explore.
Okay, Bonnie, yeah. This isn't really what we're doing here today. Thank you for the warning, and thank you for giving your opinion. Appreciate it. All right, let's now go to Gene in Gardner, Massachusetts. Okay, Gene, you're on.
Hi. I have a friend who started out with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. She's 75 years old now. She's been the gamut of medications. She was on Paquinil. She was on Endocin, prednisone. She's on methotrexate and Enbrel right now. She's had exacerbations in the past. However, this is extreme on a scale of 1 to 10 in pain. She's a 30.
Okay, so Gene, because we're running out of time, so yeah. Give us the question. Mm-hmm. What's the question?
Well, the question is they put her on Vicodin now. The question is because she's had rheumatoid for so long, and will she have to be on opioids now for the rest of her life to contain her pain?
The first question, of course, is what's the cause of the pain? In general, we don't use opioids in rheumatology practice because if it's inflammatory, we have far better drugs to use. Opioids in a 75-year-old represent a significant series of potential problems. So if the rheumatologist is giving her opioids, it may be time for a new rheumatologist.
It may be time for another rheumatologist.
Yeah, that's what I just said, exactly.
That's what he
said. Yeah, okay. Well, all right, thank you.
And thank you.
Good luck.
We are not going to be able to get to Robin in Shelburne Falls, who's been on for quite a while, or to Rick in High Falls, I guess it is. But we do apologize, but that's the way it goes when you get into these programs. I know that I'm supposed to read something. Oh, yeah. We're about out of time, and I want to thank Dr. Leonard Siegel of Berkshire Health Systems. You were terrific, Doc. Really terrific. I appreciate it so much. Support for Medical Monday comes from WMC Heart and Vascular Institute with new diagnostic cardiology suites at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospitals, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, WMCHealth.org. Thanks to our wonderful engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Joe Makowitz for answering the phone. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.